And welcome to minute 56 of season 8 of Movie Run Minute, the daily podcast, where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me this week for the first full week of 2025 is Alex Robinson from the Star Wars Minute. Welcome back to the show this season, Alex. It's been a while.
Hello there. Yes. Gosh, it's 20 from 2025. I'm still getting used to that.
Okay, you've only had 6 days to get used to it. So, you know, there you go. But I'll let you know a little secret. You have only another 360 something days to get used to it till you have to get used to a new one. So, just the way these things work.
Let's hope so.
Exactly. That's what we all hope for. Yeah. All right. Excellent. So minute 56 begins with the sniper continuing to seek a target and ends with Horvath and Jackson returning to the unit. So before we get into this, what's your background with this movie? I mean, are we going to once again discuss a movie that you've only seen these 5 minutes, or you've seen the whole movie?
No, this movie I've seen, I saw in the theater when it first came out. And I've seen it, I think, since on home video, although it has been a while since I've seen the entire film. But this one I'm definitely more familiar with.
Oh, okay. All right. That's fine. I just wanted to know, you know, I wanted to know how much to spoil and how much not. Yeah. You know, that type of thing. It's important to know these things beforehand.
No, I know. He's a villain at the end. So, like, you know, everything's, I know the ending already. So.
Oh, okay. All right. You know that the U.S. won the war.
It was a sled all along.
That's right. That's correct. 100%. Did you rewatch the whole thing right now, or you just watched these minutes?
I watched selected chunks. I feel like it's a movie that has a
including these minutes.
Yeah, definitely these minutes. Luckily, these minutes were in one of the chunks that I reviewed. But it's a very set piece kind of film. Like, oh, this is the one scene that happens, and all this it's very episodic in that sense. Kind of.
Yes. Yes. There's a number of guests have mentioned the fact that, you know, this is one of those movies that theoretically feels like a miniseries, the way that certain things are put together. You know, even though this was before the dawn of, you know, limited series, let's put it that way. Wouldn't even use miniseries. So miniseries have been around since, you know, the 60s, 70s, but yeah. Limited series was the idea that, hey, we're just going to have these small little episodes and have to build in a little bit of a cliffhanger in each of them, which, they've been doing that with the Star Wars TV shows also.
The what?
You know, the Star Wars, are you familiar with it?
I think in my memory, I tend to conflate also Private Ryan with Band of Brothers, which I've seen actually probably more times than I have Private Ryan. So I think, maybe I'm also thinking a lot about that. Obviously, that's very episodic as well, so.
Well, of course, because that one has 10 episodes.
Literally, yeah. You know?
It's easy to be episodic when you have episodes. Yes, but totally. I mean, the way that this way that this movie is set up, for sure, it's they're little segments. Unlike limited series or episodic things, it's not based on time. Mm-hmm. It's just little chunks of things that happen. You know, so.
Yeah,
but it's still fun to go through it. And hey, you get the tail end of one of those chunks and the second part of the next part of that chunk. You know,
yeah, chunky week you gave me.
Why not? You know, chunky is always good, right? Do you like your peanut butter chunky?
Actually, ironically, no, I do not. I like my peanut butter smooth. No. So.
Ah, okay. All right. And are you a fan of Chunk? Do you know who Chunk is?
From the Goonies?
Yes. There you go.
I assume some rapper or something might have taken over the name Chunk after this time, but
probably. That I'm not even familiar with.
Okay.
I know you're more of a music person. I'm more of a movie person. So uh-huh. You know, and especially 80s movies. And there you go. So right. So, I mean, basically, we ended things on Friday with, we have Caparzo sort of going through his death throes on the ground. And, you know, Jackson is trying to figure out where this sniper is, you know, and they we ended on they showed us on Friday both of the snipers looking through their scopes, and this minute just begins with a scope shot, which I like the I talked about this on Friday a little bit also. I like the fact that they give us this scope shot. You know, it gives us more of a feeling that we are this sniper. You know, we are right there with him. We're you know, this movie does it the whole time. You know, the viewer feels as if you're on this journey with the characters. And they just do it really well from that perspective. And you know, so here we have the sniper, and the scope just moves back and forth looking for the target, and then it focuses where Jackson is, and we see a small little flash, and then the next shot is of the German sniper having his head explode as he shot through the eye, or shot through the scope directly into his eye, which I gotta say that really is a million to one shot to be able to get something like that. I mean, it's purely cinematic. I don't think that would really happen.
Yeah, it
That's
does seem like
too
that
good of
seems
a
like
shot.
a like Robin Hood splitting the arrow kind of even more so kind of a shot.
Yeah,
But you
and
know,
that one we all know is
it's
CGI, you know that.
getting back to what you were saying about the POV shot where you're seeing it through the sniper.
The
What's
scope.
scope, right? It's actually he actually does it even one better because he puts you in the position of the enemy sniper by you're seeing it through his eyes, you know what I mean? So it's almost like
Right.
we're a unwilling accomplice in this, you know, we have to put ourselves in the mind even briefly of the guy who's trying to kill our hero. So it's a nice bit
That's
of
true.
unsettling, you
That's
know,
very true.
subtly unsettling. But
Yeah, but it works. There's no question about that one.
this whole thing and the, you know, this very gory shot of the guy reeling back with his eyeball shot out and stuff. So I think if you got shot in the eye like that, I have to think your head would fly back a lot quicker than, like, I don't think your head would even be able to remain upright in that type of.
Probably not. I would agree with that statement. I mean, again, we're not doing a forensic analysis, but I do believe you're right about that. You know, it doesn't. But again, it's cinematic. You know, they're trying to make sure that we see how good of a shot Jackson is. That's what it comes down to.
Well, but
You
also
know?
there is they could totally could have done that without showing the gore part aspect of it. You know what I mean? Like
Okay,
having
but
to show the
they
guy
don't
bloody
focus too.
eye, it was
That's right, but
yeah.
they don't focus too much on it. So
Oh
that's good also. You know, if it was done today, they would focus even more on it. You know, we
well, it's a...
you know, and it's
What were you
20,
gonna say?
27, you know, 27 years later, movies like to show more gore than they did back then, especially in war movies and stuff like that.
Well, as I'm sure you mentioned, this one was also very considered kind of like stepping it up in terms of like the realism, the quote unquote realism of war. It was very influential. Like every war movie after this had a definite like, oh, that's a Private Ryan type of thing. Whereas in the olden times, you wouldn't have should focus on the gore of the American soldiers getting injured because that would have been too upsetting but here's something I'm going to keep harping on all week, I'm sure, which is that I remember at the time, and I think the common conventional wisdom that this is an anti-war, a YouTube essay about it, and it totally changed my mind about it being an anti-war film per se. And then with this, the idea of whether or not any film can be anti-war, ultimately, because war in its if you're going to make a war movie, you have to show violence and blood and destruction. And as humans, we find that fascinating to look at. We love watching. So you're on the one hand by trying to say, look how horrible this war is, you have to show the things that naturally will get us excited, which is guns and violence and excitement and like so inherently as a movie cannot be anti-war because movies inherently make war exciting and visceral, which we like as viewers. You know what I mean? Whatever the
Okay, but
intentions are with
how
the.
do they you know how does this article explain the fact that you know that we're talking more about the theme of whether it's war or anti-war type of thing? It's you know it's
Right, but
not
like it.
it's an anti it's the movie is an anti-war movie that's not glorifying war. It's showing the realism of war and the type of you know everyone had to go through. That's what I
Yes and no. I mean, the opening, obviously the storming the beach scene is like one of the, I think, like iconic war things. You really see a lot of focus on how much violence and how terrified all these kids mm-hmm. were and all that stuff like that. But then as the movie goes on, and it's my criticism of the film always has been, it feels very much like a old school World War II movie. Oh, look, I'm the guy from Brooklyn, and the guy in the crew, and I'm the guy from the South, and we're all friends, even though we come from different parts of the country. Like, I'm pining for my girl back home. It all seems, I think it's difficult to do these kind of things, which I'm sure were legitimate things without it sounding cliche at this point. But leaving that aside, so the opening battle is very visceral, very, emphasis on the human cost. But the battle by the time we get to the battle at the end, it's very much like a rah, 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 we're the USA kind of, and not really focusing as much on the...
Right.
So we feel like the movie is a lot more like that, because at the very beginning it is, but then the rest of the movie, to me, it seems very much like a kind of old school Hollywood.
Okay, but they don't have the tropes, you know, like they do in Platoon, or in all the ones where you have one guy come in and say, hey, there's a picture of my girl, and when I get home, we're going to get married, and then you know that he's about to die. You know, that type of thing. You know, here they
right. Well, like even in this one, you see he pulls the bloody piece of paper out of Vin Diesel's right. hand. I mean, that's such a hokey, like, you know, and again, like you said, it's cinematic, but therefore by using that cinematic thing, it makes war less awful, because it's turning into a poetic thing, and there's like a drama to it, and so on. So, and again, I'm not saying this was Steven Spielberg's intention to subtly make a not anti-war movie, but I think the audience would just leave feeling too depressed to have it end on a scene like the scene at the opening of the film. It has to end on a slightly up.
Okay. That's
Steven Spielberg. I don't think he can end a movie without leaving a sense of hope in the audience.
Correct. Mind. Okay. Which makes sense, because that's what we want to see. Yeah. You know, you want to watch a movie that has hope.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be pretty depressing watching movies all the time where there is no hope at the end. You know, that's the.
Oh yeah.
You know that's what gets you. That's what makes you want to watch.
Yeah. Getting back to the specifics of this sniper scene, though, I do love the fact that you see the flash go before you hear the sound, honoring the laws of physics that you wouldn't hear it at the same time. And I think it's a good way to go. Whenever I watch a movie like this, anytime there's a lot of movies, deaths, I'm always thinking, would that be a good way to go?
As a sniper, is that a good way to go? Or as anyone?
if you have to die no matter what, I think looking down a sniper barrel, seeing a flash, and then suddenly everything going black is a good way to go, because you don't have much time. I mean, obviously you're probably scared going into it because they're in a fight with each other. So
no, but you can look at it from the perspective that the way that snipers are portrayed in movies is completely fearless. You know, it's like this guy is sure of himself. He's not scared. You know, we had a whole argument last week as to, you know, whether he was sweating or whether it's rain. And we came to the conclusion in the end that it's rain. It's not a guy who's sitting there concerned, and scared. You know, he's.
Yeah. That's what he tells his friends anyway. I'm not crying. It's raining.
It was raining. It was wet outside, we'll talk a little bit about the rain through the course of this week also. But for sure. That's just the way these things go. What can you do? So the sniper just as you said, his head goes back not as quickly as it should. I think it seems as if it's a little maybe in slow motion the way that it's being shown. I think that might be part of it. Hmm. You know, that the speed. I think the speed of the scene is not as. Is not normal speed, let's put it that way, in order to accentuate the fact that the shot went through the scope itself, because you see the smoke still coming out of the scope where the bullet went through it. So I think that
that does make it clearer that it went through the scope as opposed to just along the barrel or whatever.
But again, I understand what you're saying about that. This is the way you want to go. I think the way you want to go is that you don't know that you're about to go. I think that's what it comes down to. And that looks to That looks to me what's going to be happening, what's happening here.
I guess the only more better shot would have been if he had shot his gun, his bullet, into the barrel of his gun and made the gun explode.
Theoretically, happen? I mean, cinematically, you could do that. Whether it can work in real life, I don't know. I'm not an expert on that. I couldn't tell you. If Jackson is that good of a shot, I think he could do that. You know, I think I've seen movies where they've shot into the barrel of another gun. I'm pretty sure. I can't think offhand of one of them. But I don't know.
It had to have happened. Someone had to have done it in the 100 years of film history. So,
you know, yeah. We'll have to just wait and you know, hear from people who are listening as to, you know, give us examples of movies where something like that happened. Who knows?
Yeah, not cartoons. I assume that happened all the time with Wile E. Coyote. But
that's true.
But
Elmer Fudd.
Live action only.
And after the shot goes down, after the shot goes off and kills the sniper, so we once again have Miller and Horvath, you know, sitting there in the rain, waiting for a sign that they can, you know, that they can get out of there or not. And as basically, and you know, we then hear, you know, it says, "We got him. Stay down." And then they give us a lingering shot of, you know, Caparzo, Vin Diesel, just lying there, now finally dead. You know, even though it looks very strange the way that the way that his body is is just, you know, the way it's lying there. You know, that his head is in the air type of thing. Obviously, he's got a backpack on and stuff like that, but it's just. Let's put it this way. It doesn't look comfortable for the actor Vin Diesel. I know the character of Caparzo doesn't care anymore, but the actor Vin Diesel might. I don't know. And, you know, he's still got that one arm outstretched with the blood dripping out of the arm. And then the other one, you know, over his belly, holding the little piece of paper, you know. And Mellish is completely happy at this point, you know, and he's the one who screams, "We got him. Stay down." You know, even though we saw Mellish over the last few days trying to hide under the bricks, you know, pulling more bricks around him so that no one would find him, didn't help him, or it didn't help him and didn't hurt him at the same time from that perspective. And I believe that Mellish believes at this point that Caparzo is still alive. You know, he's not really sure, you know, just the way that he says it, stay down, you know, he's as if he's telling that to Caparzo, you know, we got him, stay down, we're going to come and help you. And that type of thing. And then Jackson then motions for them and everyone starts moving. Now I'm just shocked that they all know so quickly that Jackson made the shot and killed the sniper. You know, it's like, how do they know that? Jackson is maybe the only one who might have an idea that he made the shot and that the guy's, you know, the guy got hit exactly in the scope. But how would Mellish know and stuff like that? They just heard a shot ring out. Maybe they're that confident in Jackson. You know.
Yeah, I guess in real life, it would probably take several minutes of them waiting to see if anyone else was, you know, if there was any activity or anything like that. But I guess they kind of, again, for movie pacing issues.
Yeah, stuff, They have to speed things along. It seems a little funny the way that these guys are completely sure that this sniper is already gone. And, you know, obviously there's no other sniper that could be around. You know, you got one and that's it. He's the only guy who was shooting at us. So everything else is all clear.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like there's a group of Germans just sitting behind a brick wall somewhere.
Having coffee or tea or whatever it is they're drinking, you know, just waiting around for, I guess, the rain to let up. You know, I think.
Yeah, well, this does seem like a very miserable physically situation to be in, this constant rain.
Especially since it seems like they're just turning turning the rain on and off throughout the course of the movie. Yeah.
So strictly based on weather, which of the theaters did you think is the best? Which one would you have preferred to fight in? Just based on
weather. You see, part of the problem is I've seen both The Pacific and Band of Brothers, and neither is ideal. Because The Pacific, these guys were were in places where there was nothing to drink and nothing to eat, and it was boiling hot the whole time. And then everyone in Europe had to eventually deal with all the snow and all that stuff. So I don't know. I think I would probably say that I'd prefer to be in the European theater for the very fact that you can put on more layers. But on the other hand, that could also be cumbersome if you're trying to fight. So I don't know. That would be my answer. Where would you prefer?
Well, I mean, assuming you're not, have you thought about North Africa as a potential theater there? It's dry.
Well, again, I've seen movies where they're in the middle of the middle of the desert with no water either. So
I guess Southern Italy would probably be your best bet. Sorry, not as rainy as the northern parts, rain seems to be my big issue. Clearly, based on my complaints, is that it seems like you would never be dry. You would be like, it would be disgusting.
Okay, but I mean, you're in Oregon. Is that like Seattle? Is that Seattle type weather?
Well, it's funny because Portland has a reputation for being very rainy, but in terms of actual amount, like inches of rainfall, we actually get less than like New York City. But the thing is, we don't get a lot of rainfall, but we get a lot of fog and mist and like all during the winter.
Wait, isn't that from all the pot?
I plead the fifth, but it's just
I wasn't saying you, I was saying in general.
It's just during the winter it gets so oppressively because it's dark so early and it's just misty gray and wet all the time. It's like being in like a steam room because it's cold, but anyway, you get the idea.
A cold steam room.
Yes, exactly, like a fog room. Anyway, moving on.
Okay. All right. So in other words, in the end, we're going to find both of us in Italy, yeah, if need be.
Yeah.
when we have the choice.
I'll settle for south of France.
Yeah.
Not that there's much fighting there. But
that's right.
All the more
reason. South of France. Okay. That's true. So yeah, you also have, the area around Greece. There was a lot of fighting there, too. Right. Okay. Well, I guess I don't want to be in either of those places.
Of course not.
I prefer to first person watch, making it feel as if I'm there as I don't need to be there. Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to look at it. And once again, they show us the way that these guys are all just running around with the debris. Trying to move on to the next spot where they go, and obviously Wade runs over to Caparzo right away, and at the same time this little girl starts running back to her parents, and the parents are screaming in French, and she's do you understand French or not? Okay, neither do I, so I have no idea what they're saying, because as anyone knows, Steven Spielberg is notorious for leaving foreign languages untranslated, so we will never really know what it is that they're saying. I mean, we can get the idea of what she's saying, especially once she ends up getting up to her father and starts slapping him, which is I think a smart thing to do. Now, I only noticed this now. I didn't notice this last week that there's the mother's also holding a baby. I always thought that there were just two kids. I never realized that there is a baby being held there also.
Yeah.
So you think they would have given the baby as the first one to try and save from that perspective? If they're giving the kids. Really but I guess it doesn't remind Caparzo of his niece.
Right, yeah.
So that's why he won't take the baby.
And the mother is like, we kind of didn't like that girl anyway. So
maybe
we could start over.
Right. This is. That's right. Well, there's a little girl just slapping her father.
Not making your case there, girl.
No, not at all. I think we're gonna send you with the next squad that comes around.
The fourth time they've tried to do this.
That's right. Well, if it was, then we would see a bunch of bodies on the ground, just like Caparzo.
Drag them away. They don't want
every unit.
Don't want,
Well, who's going to drag him away? The French couple or the sniper? Oh, yeah. You know?
Good point.
Exactly. And then the question is asked, how bad is it? And Wade then responds and goes, chest, maybe lung shot, meaning that he knows that there's nothing he can do for him here. And as we can see, he's no longer breathing at this point.
The bad sign.
Now, what the one thing I love is, do you notice the shot when the girl is climbing up and then she gets to her father and starts slapping him? We basically had a split screen shot because on the right hand side, we see her arguing with her father. And then on the left hand side, we see the men gathering around Caparzo trying to help him.
Yeah, that's.
This is like at second 34 type of thing you can see.
It's something you probably notice more when you're doing it minute by minute, because when you're watching.
Have you ever done anything minute by minute that you would notice?
I have become aware that there are some things, like obviously when most people are seeing this for the first time, their attention is probably going to be on the girl and the father because they're in the foreground, they're speaking, they're moving around a lot, whereas the other one is a much kind of more static scene of them far off in the distance.
So. Yes.
Those things are fun to notice when you're doing this minute by minute stuff.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Because again, it's the type of thing that, you know, I've seen this movie dozens of times and, you know, I've never noticed that before because you don't pay attention to it. I never even heard the fact that they mentioned that it's a chest, maybe long shot. You know, these are things also, unless you're looking at the subtitles, you're not going to really know who's saying what and what they're saying. Also, it goes by so quickly.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like I said, the girl just starts slapping her father, and the mother and son, I guess, seem very distraught. I don't know if it's about the fact that the girl is hitting the father, or they're just distraught about the fact that, you know, we tried this again and it didn't work. We still can't get rid of that girl. I don't know.
They probably had some degree of worried look on their face for a few years now. So it's, you know, I'm sure it's just cumulative now of just everything that's been going on, you know,
could be
the war, et cetera.
It could be right.
Or then next.
That's right. Then the shot changes and we see Hill running through the, through the area with two of his men. And Hill says, get that 30 up on the street. Obviously he's talking about a machine gun, a 30 caliber machine gun.
Mm-hmm. I said, obviously.
Obviously, of course, of course. Which it's basically the, you know, this was one of the main weapons that was used as a heavy weapon for the, you know, during World War II. It was a 30 caliber. They referred to it at the time as a, right, so it's the 30 carbine. That's what it is, 30 millimeter carbine. Of what they wanted to use there. And, you know, the it uses the same bullets that like an AK-47 uses and, you know, a lot of Russian weapons. So it's interesting because this isn't the type of bullet that many U.S. weapons use after this time. You know, they afterwards, you know, in Vietnam, you know, they use the 5.56 and this is a 7.62. And stuff like that. And at this point, you know, that we get a tracking shot on the men, and then Horvath turns around because he hears something and starts walking towards the side. And you just have men running all around. Nobody seems to know where they're going at this point. You know, they're trying to find something. And then Miller screams, and then we hear one of the soldiers scream, "Clear up!" Another one saying, "Clear down!" You know, making sure that the area is secure and stuff like that. Now, have you ever heard the term clear up, clear down before besides in this movie?
No.
Okay. Well, it turns out that it is great. It's I mean, we'll see it later this week. Also, it comes up again. But everyone should know that this is not a term that was used during World War II. It was a term that they only started using in Vietnam.
Fascinating.
Yes. Apparently, you know, Dale Dye, who was the military consultant, apparently just remembered that this is what they did in Vietnam and said, okay, let's use this.
So they didn't have an actual WW2 expert on hand. They had a Vietnam expert on hand.
Well, they had Dale Dye. I mean, come on. Dale Dye, at this time, you know, ever since Platoon, Dale Dye became the person, you know, the go-to guy for military stuff.
Right, but I mean,
you know, apparently Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks, you know, relied a little too much on Dale Dye at this point.
Yeah,
he must know what he's talking about.
Always confirm. Always had to have a second source just to. Exactly. Making stuff up by that time. It's like, oh yeah, that's what we used to say.
That's right. Well, again, they did say it in Vietnam, so it makes sense. The idea of you know, one guy above and one guy below, and saying, okay, we've you know, everything is secure. We're all good.
That's a fascinating thing to me, because over in Star Wars land, you know, when you watch the original Star Wars movies, the stormtroopers are just like regular actors, extras with, you know, carrying around prop guns and stuff. But then you get to like Rogue One, and now suddenly they're all like acting like real, you know, Earth soldiers, holding their guns in the same way and communicating the same way. It's an interesting evolution on screen of how war, how combat is portrayed.
Well, I mean, it probably had to do with the budget.
Right. I mean, it must be weird for those like veterans watching movies in like the 50s depicting World War II, and they're like, this is not what it was like at all. You know what I mean? This is such a playhouse version of what it must have been like.
That's right. Know? Because again, I mean, Steven Spielberg got so much praise from World War II veterans about how accurate and scary this was that many of them had more nightmares after watching it.
They didn't say clear up. They didn't say clear up. No,
That's right. Even James Doohan, you know, praised him for this. I know that Pete's a big Star Trek fan. Are you also a Star Trek fan?
I am a Star Trek fan.
Have you ever noticed that James Doohan is missing a finger on the show?
I've never noticed it on the show. I recently saw a behind the scenes picture where he was holding a child in his arms. And you could clearly see his finger, and the caption pointed out that it was a rare time where you could actually see
because
usually it's made an effort. You know, it's like Gary Berghoff with the when he was Radar. You know, he had a hand problem, and they had to kind of film around it and hide it as much as they could.
Right. Okay. You know, makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. And that's all I have for this minute. As Horvath and Jackson. You know, finish their running around and returning back to, you know, where everyone's standing around the dead Caparzo.
We assume he's dead.
Correct. Well, the Caparzo who's not moving. How's that?
Is that the still Caparzo?
That's right. The Vin Diesel's a little acting as if he's not moving. You know, uh-huh. All right. Great. So every Monday we have a segment called Maestro Monday, where my guests will give their top five John Williams movie themes. So Alex, what do you have on your list?
Now, when you said movie themes, I assumed you meant like this is the soundtrack to this
movie,
not like soundtrack. Yoda's theme or
Luke's No.
Okay, that's how I did it, based on by the movie.
No.
Do I start at the top or the bottom?
Yeah, if we were to go, there would be so much more to have to choose from if we were to actually go into trying to figure that one out. Yeah, start with your number five and work your way up.
All right, number five would be Close Encounters. Close Encounters. I don't think any of mine are past. Anyway, we'll see what happens. The five is Close Encounters. Four, Jaws. Number three, Superman. Number two, The Raiders of the Lost Ark. And number one, of course, Star Wars, a.k.a. Episode One, A New Hope. There you go.
So none Episode of past- One, A New Hope? Sorry, one second, did you four. Say?
Well, no, it's just, yeah, you got
No, maybe that's what you refer to it as. That's
for possible. Me, it's the first movie, so that's, you know.
I understand. For me, it is also.
Yeah, but, so there you go. Do people have a wide range of things? What are some of the other?
Yeah, there are a lot of wide range. I mean, people have a lot of people have Jurassic Park on their list.
Oh yeah, that would make sense. ET get a lot of votes.
ET has not gotten a lot of votes. It's only had two votes. So.
Oh wow.
Yeah. You know, I'm actually surprised that you choose Star Wars over Empire, but.
I can listen to the Star Wars soundtrack and pretty much know what's going on every time I hear music, whereas Empire, I get, it's a little bit more vague there. So it's, you know, also very good.
I mean, I remember, right. No, obviously I remember when the special edition came out. So they came out with the, you know, two disc CDs of each of the three movies, you know, the original ones. Right. And I would actually listen to them as I was going to bed at night. And it got to the point where, again, I knew everything that was going on, you know, as the music is swelling and going up and down, you know, through all three of them, stuff like that, which at certain points would annoy friends of mine when I would watch the movies with them, and I would start humming the tune, you know, and even if someone were to pause the movie, I would continue humming it because I knew what was continuing with that. But okay. You know, to each his own. So Alex, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Alex Robinson these days?
My website is called alexrobinson.fun, and there you can find not only a link to a Star Wars Minute, my version, or the version of this show that we do, my friend Pete and I do, but about the Star Wars movies, and StarWarsMinute.com. I also do, by this time, I will have finished up The Godfather. My brother and I were doing The Godfather Minute, and we finished Godfather 1 and Godfather 2. Period. We're not sure if we're ever going to.
In other words, as far as you're concerned, it's just the duology. Well,
It's more just that we've been doing this, you know, one episode per week, and the Godfather movies are like 2.5-3 hours long. So we've been doing this every week for like 7 years straight. And so we're like, well, we maybe want to take a break and work on something else for a little while rather than commit to another 3.5 years of talking about the Godfather. So, yeah.
Okay. Are you a fan of the third one?
I think it's flawed, but it has some worthwhile things in it. It's definitely an epilogue to the story rather than, you know, a full-blown chapter in its own right. So.
Okay. And when you watch it, do you try and watch them? You know, I know that they have the the version is called. Maybe it's the ultimate version or something like that, which has all three movies in chronological order.
They did one called, I think it's like the Godfather Epic. I've never seen them in that order.
Yeah, maybe the Godfather Saga, maybe that's what it's called.
Yeah, they did a couple of different permutations of that. I think one had three mixed in, but then one had the first two or something. So, yeah, I've never watched any of those versions.
Right. No, so like I like the third one, but I don't think that it's it had a lot more potential than it realized.
Oh yeah,
you know, right. From that perspective.
Right.
So.
Well, it was doomed. Once they didn't bring back Robert Duvall's character, it was gonna fail no matter what on a story level.
Okay.
So.
Bye. So it's all Robert Duvall's fault. There you go.
No, Paramount. They were paying him. They were gonna pay him a pittance, and he's like, I know I'm gonna get less than Al Pacino, but come on. And so they wouldn't pay him his salary demands. So I would blame Paramount for that.
Okay.
Personally.
Okay.
But. Let's just go to godfatherminute.com and hear me talk about that constantly.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find my website, movearoundminute.com. Or if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@movearound.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
My solitude.